Welcome to 2016 ACG Best of the Day. In this four-part series, we're going to talk about the clinical implications and important abstracts that were presented at ACG 2016. My name is Miguel Ruggiero. I'm professor of medicine at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, and I'm happy to be joined by Dr. Russell Cohen from the University of Chicago, also professor of medicine in their IBD program. Russ, welcome.
Thanks, Miguel.
So in the first part, tell me some of the interesting abstracts you saw in the presentations and how this applies to our clinical practices.
Well, you know, Miguel, this is a great meeting for someone who practices clinical IBD, because the abstracts that were oral presentations and posters really had a very nice mix of information that I personally found valuable, and I think that many of our followers will as well, too. Practicing gastroenterologists, nurse practitioners, PAs, and other healthcare providers. So I wanted to highlight a couple of them today. The first was an oral presentation that was part of the plenary session,
right,
which was a look at a Danish national cohort of patients with inflammatory bowel disease, both Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, who had started their first anti-TNF medication, either infliximab or adalimumab. Mm. And what these researchers did is they looked at the experience with these medicines, and particularly looking at complications such as hospitalizations, disease-related hospitalizations, surgeries, infections, serious infections, and other outcomes. And the findings were actually quite striking. In the case of Crohn's disease, which was the majority of the patients, there did not seem to be any major differences in patients who had either started as their first TNF with infliximab or adalimumab in terms of all over hospitalizations, all hospitalizations, all-cause hospitalizations, or disease-related hospitalizations, so Crohn's-related hospitalizations, no difference in serious infections or in surgeries. So one might think, well, that's not that interesting. That might be what you'd predict. They're both effective therapies and ones that we've been using for many years.
Mm-hmm.
Where it gets interesting is on the analysis of the ulcerative colitis patients. Because unlike the Crohn's analysis, where the two agents had similar outcomes, in the ulcerative colitis subset, there was a difference. The patients who had received adalimumab as their first anti-TNF had higher all-cause hospitalizations and higher ulcerative colitis hospitalization rates. And also, they had had higher serious infection rates than the patients who had received infliximab as their first anti-TNF for ulcerative colitis.
So, that's really interesting. And I think a lot of us in practice wonder, how do we position these? And I think what you're alluding to and this presentation has shown is a comparative effective cohort. Now, it's in a Danish cohort, but it sounds like, you know, it was well done. And I guess a couple things that you mentioned that I want to touch on. So from a Crohn's disease standpoint, taking this back to the practice based on this comparative effective study, what's your take-home message for Crohn's? How do you look at this in your practice, and how would you guide other physicians in the field?
Well, you know, I think the differences, and in part, are due to different practice patterns when we treat Crohn's and ulcerative colitis. So in direct answering your question, my answer for it seems that at least the pattern of treatment of Crohn's disease in the Danish cohort, so we could say in their population, which I don't think is that much different, is it is a main therapy in many patients with Crohn's disease. It is something that we often will go to in treating Crohn's disease, both either infliximab or adalimumab.
Right.
And that the patient selection and outcomes were roughly the same. And again, I think where it gets interesting is in ulcerative colitis.
Right. So one thing, you know, so if I were to hear the presentation that we heard today and then what you just said is, so Russ, you're saying there's not maybe much difference in infliximab and adalimumab outcomes in Crohn's disease. But in ulcerative colitis, maybe we're seeing a signal from hospitalizations. But what I found really intriguing was also the infection part. And I know we can extrapolate. The study doesn't really delineate why that may be. But talk about the infections. What was the difference, again, between the two groups?
Well, you know, the infections difference is quite striking. The odds ratio was 13.0, mm-hmm. with the confidence intervals weren't that wide. It was quite a big difference, and I'm a little puzzled. I mean, the hospitalizations, the way I could perhaps see this happening is, for many patients, at least in the United States, doctors seem to use the TNFs as a more of a Hail Mary, if you will. And I guess it was a Danish cohort, so if they don't know the Hail Mary term in American football, that's when all cause is lost and you just heave the ball up and hope for the best. So I think that in ulcerative colitis, a lot of people were and then and may continue to use it more as an anti-TNF, as a Hail Mary. And there is some suggestion that an IV infusion of infliximab in ulcerative colitis from the clinical trials has higher efficacy rates than the subcutaneous load with the adalimumab. And perhaps that's why the hospitalization data was different.
Right.
But the serious infection that doesn't really make much
doesn't
sense.
Doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. So you'd say, well, maybe the patients with adalimumab are on more corticosteroids and higher dose corticosteroids for a longer period of time. And the other answer, actually, may be if they were on more narcotics.
Right.
Or if there were other problems that were actually disproportionately.
So maybe some other factors that we still need to wait and see about. But I guess, so this is very interesting. And maybe to summarize what I've heard from you, infliximab, adalimumab, comparative effective studies, which we've all been wanting. No real difference in Crohn's in terms of clinical outcomes and infections and safety. Ulcerative colitis, we see a signal, decreased hospitalizations, and for reasons that we don't understand, an increase in infections. So, interesting. Now, let's move on to maybe another study. Tell me about another study that you found interesting in this first part.
Well, yeah, you know, actually, there was another study that I think kind of relates to these because it helps us figure out how to manage our patients. And this was a study looking at sertolizumab. Mm-hmm. So sertolizumab is FDA approved in the United States for Crohn's disease treatment, not for ulcerative colitis. So this would have been a Crohn's disease trial. And there have been many sertolizumab trials. And this was a retrospective review of 9 different sertolizumab trials where they looked at trough levels of the drug and tried to correlate them with outcomes. And I would say that more likely than not, the lessons from this trial can easily be spread across the other agents as well, too. Because, surprise, surprise, if you had good, high sertolizumab trough levels, you had better outcomes. You had better clinical outcomes across the board of everything they studied. And we have seen that type of information with other biologic therapies. In fact, I don't think we haven't seen it with any of the biologic therapies, and we probably won't. Good drug levels are what our goals are. Now, it may be a little unclear what is a good drug level. There just now has been commercially available sertolizumab levels just recently, in the United States at least. So I think that's something that we may need to tease out.
So it's as I look at this study, think about what you just said. We know therapeutic drug monitoring is here to stay. Seeing it with the other biologics. Now we're seeing it with sertolizumab. And I think, and maybe talk a little bit about it, it sounds like they actually looked at, I think, week 6 or some early time points in terms of drug levels. And like you said, no surprise, good drug level early predicts good long-term outcome. And then they looked at a later time as well. Maybe your practice, how does this influence what you do? I know you just mentioned there's a commercially available assay now for sertolizumab, as there are for some of the others. How are you positioning? How do you use this data in your clinical practice and for take home for the audience as well?
Sure. You know, I think that the early data is also seen with infliximab and adalimumab, where early levels after induction predict better outcomes, which you can understand. But in reality, I think that if someone's not doing well, it's a good idea to check levels and antibodies if that's available, because you and I both do decision algorithms.
Right.
And the idea is that if you have plenty of drug and no antibodies and you're failing a particular mechanism, then, as presuming the patient doesn't have an infection, that you're truly failing this mechanism, in this case the TNF mechanism, then it might behoove you to switch mechanisms. And we have multiple other mechanisms, anti-adhesion molecule, and now in Crohn's disease we have an anti-IL-12-23 mechanism, at least for the infusible injectable biologics. On the other hand, if you were to check drug levels and antibodies, and the drug level is low, but the antibodies were low or negligible, you would then dose increase the same biologic you're using, if possible. If it turns out that you have no drug and high levels of antibodies, then you really didn't fail the mechanism. You made antibodies to that drug, so it's time to switch. And if the patient had done well in that family, we were talking about certolizumab, but infliximab, the TNF family, you would stick in that TNF family as well, too. Just as an aside, you would also then be more likely to have concomitant therapy with azathioprine, 6-MP, or methotrexate to prevent antibody formation, at least decrease the chance, of antibody formation with the subsequent infusible injectable biologic.
So it sounds like, if I'm hearing you correctly, the first scenario is that primary non-responder to anti-TNF. And although this certolizumab study didn't really delineate it that way, if you have good drug level but they're not responding in an early time point, you know what? Maybe we go to a different class of medicine. But if their drug level's low, no antibodies, we can give more of that drug, probably works. Or if they start to react and have antibodies to the drug, but it's worked, that's a secondary loss of response. We switch to something else.
In the same family.
In the same family with another anti-TNF. But like you said, now with the adhesion molecules, the IL-12-23 and some others that are coming down the line, I think we have other options. So maybe to wrap up this discussion, I think the take-home message from the certolizumab study are the therapeutic drug monitoring for certolizumab shows what we have seen before. Good drug levels early predict good response long term. And I think some of us, as you've alluded to, Russ, are starting to measure these early, maybe after induction, and maybe using that information to guide our future treatment and maybe doing escalation of therapy earlier than we would have in the past. I'd like to wrap it up. I really appreciate your time. It was very interesting to hear about these anti-TNF studies coming out at the best of day, ACG 2016, both with adalimumab and infliximab, the comparative effective study, and then the early therapeutic drug monitoring study with certolizumab. So thanks again, Russ, for contributing to this best of the day, ACG 2016. It was my pleasure speaking with you today. And for the audience, thank you for attending. Hopefully you gained some information and knowledge that will help you in your practices on anti-TNF therapy. That's going to conclude the part one, but now we're going to have a part two coming up, and there will be a third and fourth part as well. So stick around, and thank you for listening.